The Buffalo News Ice Time podcast is brought to you by Express Windows. Windows starting at $359 installed. Visit expresswindowsinc.com.
Welcome to Ice Time, the Buffalo News' hockey podcast. I'm Lance Lasowski, the Sabres beat writer for the Buffalo News, and joined, as always, by Mike Harrington. And we got news right off the top, Mike. Jacob Bryson re-signs with the Sabres. One-year contract extension. $900K. Kevin Adams, that's the third player that he's extended in the last couple of weeks. Their only pending UFAs remaining are mostly Rochester guys.
Yeah. I mean, we need to not have the discussion anymore, and fans not to need to have the discussion about Kevin Adams. If he's allowed to make the big trade of Cousins and Norris and he's, you know, re-signing guys, I don't think he's going anywhere. And as far as, you know, signing Bryson, he skates well, you know, but he's just a guy. I think he's a good guy to be your seventh defenseman. He's cheap at 900 grand, but he doesn't move the needle a lot. So you bring him back as your seventh guy and you go out and get some, you know, harder edge defensemen in this offseason to really augment this roster.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. He's good on the breakout. Lindy Ruff, it took some time for him to really start to like Bryson's game, but eventually Bryson earned Lindy's trust, and he really likes the way that he plays quick. He's able to get the puck out of the zone, simple. The only issue is, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they build out the rest of this D-core, because, yeah, he's a fine number seven. That's okay. It's just, what else are they going to do here with that group? You know, Byram's one of the notable restricted free agents. You know, we're going to talk about Owen Power. You got Ollie. Those are your two pillars, and you got to decide how you build around the rest of the group.
It's a big question mark for the offseason. You're right. You need a good partner for Power. You need to decide what you're doing with Byram. I think Samuelson's days are numbered here. So you're really looking to build out your numbers 4, 5, 6 guys, you know, swap out what you have and get some other guys in here in those three spots to go with Dahlin, Byram, and Power.
And you need to prioritize physicality. Bryson, yep. That's obviously not his strength. He's 5'9". He's an excellent skater, which helps him kill plays in a different way. He's particularly good at defending rush chances usually, but, you know, with Dennis Gilbert gone, and, you know, we'll see about Connor Clifton. I would be surprised if he's back next year as well. Like, 1 year left on his deal with about $3 million and change. That's a contract that wouldn't be difficult to move if that's somebody that Lindy Ruff just doesn't envision as part of this roster moving forward.
Right. You need more sandpaper back there. I don't think Clifton is, you know, the apple of Lindy's eye. There's been some bad penalties taken over the course of time. They need to be tougher physically on the back end. No question about it. And that's going to be one of Adams' big projects.
Yeah, the Samuelson conversation is one that's going to be very interesting. You know, he's been playing with Dahlin a lot recently, and wildly inconsistent, I think, is the most polite way to put his season. You know, there's glimmers of what we had seen a couple of years ago when he was just very consistent while healthy, but there's just too many mistakes with the puck, and, you know, he obviously got beat in Boston by letting a guy get behind him. I know there was some confusion with the extra man on the ice in that exact scenario, but just the effort on the back check. It's just not a good look, just given where his season is at, excuse me. And he's got a letter on his chest, Mike, and he just hasn't lived up to that.
No, and you're just with Samuelson, for me, you cannot get past what happened against the Devils with Tage Thompson. It really is going to be the epitaph to Samuelson's career in Buffalo, I think. I don't see any way they can keep him on the roster in the wake of that. And you're right, the guy's wearing a letter. He's not going to be wearing a letter next year if he were to be here, but I just don't see any way they keep him.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just one instant either. There have been several instances, really, where there's been a scrum or one of their prominent players is in the middle of a scrum and he doesn't do anything about it. You're 6'4". You're supposed to bring toughness and physicality. And time and again, Lindy's had to remind him, you're supposed to be physical. That's what we want you to do. That's why you're in the lineup. And he delivers it, you know, for a couple of games, and then it falls by the wayside too often.
I think it's just one of those guys who the shelf life is expired, and it's disappointing. They signed him prematurely to a long-term deal. They got to figure out a way to unload this contract with a few years left on it still, but it's not expensive on a year-over-year basis. But yeah, it's been a disappointment in his career arc here, and it's time to go.
I'd argue that is the one contract extension that shouldn't have been given out. I'm fine with, you know, obviously the Tage Thompson contract is the best of the bunch. You could, and Dahlin, obviously, but Power, right. And that's a good segue to Owen Power. He played two very good games. His last two games are very good, Vegas and Boston. And, you know, of course, there were some great plays offensively. The goal, assisting on the game-winning goal in Boston, two assists in that game, three-point night. But it's what he was able to do defensively against those two teams that really stood out to Lindy Ruff. And he's made sure to mention it. And he's gone out of his way to, you know, he knows about the criticism. He's obviously seen it because he's gone out of his way to bring it up. And he's mentioned just this is a guy that's worked hard in practice every day to become a more physical player. And it's not coming as fast as everybody would like, but they really see him adding that aspect to his game. And it's obviously something with his size. He's got to bring it consistently.
He does. Excuse me. He understands that too. I spoke to him after practice Wednesday in Utah, and you know, the offensive game is where it needs to be right now. And you saw that in Boston. The defensive game remains a work in progress. The awareness in front of that, front of the net, the physicality, it's gotten better. Lindy made a point yesterday to bring it up again. And Power knows that his game is not complete at this point. And I think people who jump on Power, and I understand why the team has been losing, Power is essentially almost at the same spot Rasmus Dahlin was in that 21-22 season, when Don Granato kept giving Dahlin as much backing as he could in the face of all the criticism. And Power now, we'll see what he can do in the offseason. We'll see what a better partner can do for him. You know, but a little commercial here, when I spoke to him yesterday, it was a good chat, and we'll be having that in Inside the NHL column in Sunday's paper and online. And he had a lot of thoughts about his defensive game. He's certainly, like you are, he's happy with his offensive game, and he knows that he's an $8 million defenseman now. He's got to be better defensively. He's got to have more awareness in front of the net. This is not news to Owen Power, people. Believe me. He knows. Lindy knows. But you're right. The last two games especially, very encouraging on an all-around basis for Owen Power. You know, if he had no points against Boston, that was an outstanding performance. He had 3 points, made a huge difference in the game. So that's the kind of play they can get from him. He is, let's not forget, a number one overall pick.
He is very good with the puck. And the way that he can just carry it up, he's a one-man breakout just like Dahlin is in so many ways. Then there's two areas. It's physicality, awareness around that, like you mentioned, and being more decisive in the offensive zone, being quicker to make decisions. That's something that Lindy Ruff has talked about since really the start of training camp. You know, and it goes to the power play as well. He hesitates to make that play. When Lindy, just shoot it. Just shoot it. Find your man. And you saw it on that game-winning goal in Boston where he saw that shot lane, and he could have just kept holding it, which is something that he had done in the past. And I know that the contract, when you sign these younger players to these big-ticket deals, you always basically know as a general manager, you're not going to get your return on investment right away. The whole goal is that you're getting your return on your investment. It becomes a discount a few years into that deal. And because they knew they were going to have the cap space, they could afford it. And now it's just a matter of continuing his development and making sure he's heading in the right direction. And you've seen steps. It's just he's going to have to keep building and get stronger this summer. I think that's another big piece of it. He is a very big kid. Like, he's 6'6". He is not easy to move, but he needs to get stronger in his lower body and just be able to finish checks and really just be, you hear that old adage in hockey, be more difficult to play against. But I've really liked what I've seen throughout the season. I think that a lot of these defensemen took a while to adjust to the way that Lindy wants them to play. It's all about boxing out, which is something that you didn't see them do a whole lot of with Don Granato as coach. Some guys have enjoyed that challenge. Other guys have pushed back on it. And he's somebody who's been really receptive to it. And as much as there have been growing pains, he's really enjoyed it. And that's another good, I guess, segue to our next topic.
Don't wait months for new windows on your home. Express Windows can have them installed in just weeks with high-quality double-hung windows starting at only $359. Call Express Windows for a free at-home estimate or stop by our showroom on Delaware Avenue in Tonawanda.
Ryan McLeod, Mike, is somebody that, you know, you saw all the comments from Edmonton in the summer. It seemed like, you know, Oilers media and fans were just so excited to get that guy off the team. And they just kept poking holes through his game. He's not physical enough. You know, go back and watch him in the playoffs. And I get it. He doesn't shoot the puck often enough. I know that still drives Lindy Ruff crazy. But in the end, it was, and this is one of the reasons why, if Kevin Adams is back next year, it's the type of trade. Like, they did overall, like, the players they brought in last summer have worked out as you would have liked them to. Some of the fourth liners, obviously, they swung and missed. They should have done more with the D-core. But Jason Zucker and Ryan McLeod, I mean, McLeod, they've needed him to step up in a bigger role with, you know, Josh Norris out, Dylan Cousins traded, Yuri Kulik, you know, on the shelf, off the shelf, some of the inconsistencies as a rookie, and he's delivered in a big way, I think.
Yeah, and when the trade happened, obviously there was this uproar about trading Matt Savoy, and I just reminded people, your prospects are there to either A, develop, or B, be used as assets in other deals. You traded Matt Savoy, who I still think can become a fine NHL player who hasn't done anything at Edmonton yet, for a guy who played in 105 games last year. He played in 105 games. He played in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, and we said they need more veteran players, more adults in the room, and Ryan McLeod has been that. And on top of that now, you've got, what is it, 15 goals and 37 points going into the Utah game and a point streak going. And his confidence offensively has really taken off here. And Lindy Ruff trusts him in all situations. He's plus 10. I mean, that's the kind of move Adams has to make. You need to get more veterans in here. And he brought in McLeod. He brought in Zucker in the offseason. You can't argue about either of those moves at this point. And you know what? That's fine if Matt Savoy becomes a good player in Edmonton. That's okay, because Ryan McLeod has clearly become a linchpin kind of player in Buffalo, and that's what they needed.
A reminder, he's only a restricted free agent, and he's making $2.1 million this year. So his next contract, you're not paying that. At most, probably $4.5 million. Right. Like, he is a bargain. He's 25 years old. The elite speed, the way that he's able to enter the zone and help you exit, and just defensively so responsible. I know recently with him being in more of an offensive role, the turnovers have been a little bit more frequent, and that's why Lindy, I think, he was asked about him, you know, after practice in Salt Lake City, and he didn't give the most glowing answer because I think he's been a little frustrated with some of the turnover, like the Vegas botched empty net goal. It was McLeod who turned it over in that situation. He got pickpocketed in the neutral zone. So he's got to be a little bit careful with that. But, you know, it's somebody that coming in, he wanted to prove that he could do more offensively. It's very difficult to have that kind of role in Edmonton when you're behind not only McDavid and Draisaitl, but Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Those are three centers, you know, that could play above you. And it has worked out in every way imaginable, that, you know, for Buffalo, and that he's given them the replacement for Casey Mittelstadt, in a lot of ways an upgrade, because with Mittelstadt, their pace of play was a problem last year. They were not a fast enough team, not only with Mittelstadt, but you had, you know, Greenway and Benson. They're not the quickest players. So they revamped that fourth line to get some more speed in there, you know, over guys like Okposo, and they brought in somebody like McLeod. And, you know, I don't see him he's got to shoot the puck more to be a guy out that's going to be consistently on the power play, but the key faceoffs and somebody that you're going to be able to build around moving forward. You mentioned that some of these prospects, you can't keep them all. And they made their decision when they kept Zach Benson, that you can't have Zach Benson, Jack Quinn, Matt Savoy, Isak, like, you can't have all these smaller guys. So at some point you had to make a decision there. And, you know, in my opinion, they made the right one.
You know, and McLeod too is a guy who elevates the entire team speed, like you said. Mittelstadt, for all the consternation over that trade, you got Bowen Byram. Mittelstadt get traded again. He flamed out in Colorado, gets traded to Boston. It didn't work in Colorado after he had a good playoff last year. So you elevate your team speed. You elevate your defensive play. You got some face-off ability out of McLeod. I just think that's, you know, you look at, it's funny, all this talk, correct talk, based on the standings of firing Adams. Absolutely. I don't think he should be back. But then you say, gee, he just signed his best free agent in Jason Zucker. He's made two really good trades with Byram for Mittelstadt, McLeod coming here for Savoy. You know, so that's why Adams is a real polarizing figure, because the McLeod acquisition is excellent. And that's what the Sabres are going to need again in the offseason, a couple more NHL players. How many times do we have to say it? More adults in the room, no more the youngest team in the NHL.
Yeah, the biggest mistake really was failing to identify. You needed that. They've been searching for a D partner for Owen Power for 3 years at this point. So failing to get that, that's one of Adams' bigger mistakes up to this point. And really just not reshaping that group over last summer, and then not doing anything during the winless streak, right? Like that was a big mishap. So
in some ways you could say he did plenty over the summer to retool the roster.
But that's a fake. That is an inaccurate narrative that is pushed among some fans that he didn't do anything. They did a lot. They did a lot in the summer. They just they needed to do more with that D core. That is the only thing really. Like you look at that roster. A lot of the guys they brought in have worked.
Right. They didn't do anything during the winless streak. That is the problem. 13 games in a row, you got to do something.
And two of the free agents they missed on, Lafferty and Abe Kubel, on paper, those were good signings. It just hasn't worked out the way that you would imagine. So I'm not going to hold that against them. There's other issues at play there. There's going to be plenty of time for us to ruminate over, moving forward and Adams' last couple of years as general manager. Next topic, Mike. Is there a cause for concern with Josh Norris? He's out again tonight in Utah. He's not practicing with the team. There's obviously, it's only a couple of games. Big picture, not a big deal. As long as this isn't like a long-term injury or something that's a bigger issue at play here. But it's not a good look exactly when you have Dylan Cousins playing well in Ottawa in a playoff race. And we've seen Norris for 3 games. And one of the last game was just a really bad loss. Then you didn't really see anything from almost anybody in that game, although he scored.
In the Detroit game, yeah. He's on the trip, so that's the first thing. That's a plus.
Yeah.
If it was a serious injury, he wouldn't be here. Kulik's not here. Norris is. Lindy hasn't ruled Norris out. We'll see. I mean, without any practice time, I don't see how he plays in Minnesota or Winnipeg. I do think the whole goal here, he's on the trip. The goal here has got to be play against Ottawa on Tuesday. I think that's really what they have in mind. You got to get him back in the lineup. You got to see what you have here. He's a key guy going forward. He signed at big money and more money than Cousins. They didn't save money in that trade. Cousins will calm down in Ottawa. He had the newness thing going. Let's not forget, Cousins had one goal in his last 17 games in Buffalo. And after the quick start in Ottawa, he did roll up a -3 against Montreal the other night. So that the Canadian media hype of the trade and Cousins will calm down at some point. Dylan Cousins, nice player, nice guy. He's not in the Hart Trophy balloting. Okay, calm down, Canadian media. All right.
Well, now the Canadian media is fat. They're head over heels about the Montreal Canadiens. So don't worry. They've got a new apple in their eye at the moment.
Is it the nightmare scenario? Is it the nightmare scenario of dealing with the Canadian media if the two wild cards in the East this year are the Ottawa Senators and the Montreal Canadiens? I don't even know how I'm going to read any of this stuff if they're both in the playoffs this year, while the Leafs are in the playoffs, while Edmonton's in the playoffs, while Vancouver's in the playoffs, while Winnipeg is leading the West. I'm sick of hearing about 1993. I really am. It's not about, a Canadian team hasn't won. Who cares if a Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup? There's 32 teams. You go play. I don't care if it's a Canadian team or an American team. It's like they're acting like it's their birthright. It's just ridiculous.
Well, it's also perplexing, and I know for fans it's extremely frustrating, that the Sabres were so much further ahead than those two teams 2 years ago.
Right.
They were the Atlantic Division team everybody was picking to make that jump, and they've fallen behind not only those two but Detroit. So that's what has to lead to bigger questions. I know that, and we're going to get into this in the days and the weeks to come, but okay, Adams is back. You need to make some kind of change in terms of how you're operating. Bring in another experienced person into hockey ops. You can't sell this to the fan base by bringing back basically entirely the same roster. Yeah, they're going to make a couple moves in the summer. But most of the team, if you look at who they have right now, Mike, it's hard to imagine there being that much change in the coming months between opening night. Like, they're players of their players. They're one of their biggest moves, or probably the biggest move, happened a couple of weeks ago with Josh Norris coming in. So they need him to be a real difference maker.
Yes.
And they need
him to be good.
Although these last couple of weeks don't matter because this team's not – they're done, you know, they're playing, they're building toward next season. That's what all the talk is at the moment. A big piece of that is Josh Norris building chemistry with line mates, getting that power play figured out, because he's supposed to be a huge piece on that power play. It's one of the reasons why they acquired him. So it's something that they need to get him on the ice. All right.
And they need to get him on the ice, and he needs to start producing. He needs to get comfortable in the lineup, get comfortable with the Buffalo Sabres, get over the immediate shock of no longer being with the Ottawa Senators, and understand what his, like you said, what his role is going to be in the future as a key guy here. And the longer it goes, the more frustrating it is for everyone. The number of games Ottawa wins and Dylan Cousins scores points, it's a bad look. And they said pretty much it was not, but you do worry about that shoulder that Josh Norris has had a lot of trouble with. And we were told it was middle body, and there's a lot of nebulous things going on here.
He's reading between the lines, oblique.
Yeah, I don't think it's the shoulder. We don't think it's the shoulder, but he's got to get back on the ice here. He's got to get in the lineup and start playing. They need to know before this season is over. And I get it. Byron was uncomfortable last year at the end, too, and is a different player this year when he got used to the system and got used to the players a little more, and Lindy came in.
That's a good point.
But Norris needs to at least show something here toward the end of the year.
Yeah. And the more one of the other disappointing aspects of this, like with Norris out, this would be a great opportunity for Kulik to be playing a lot, and he's hurt. These are valuable reps for Ryan McLeod, as we mentioned, but you know, it's tough to see, you know, that hit on Kulik, and it, you know, it's going to keep him out here for a little bit. So we'll see what happens there.
Concussion protocol. He's not on the trip.
Yeah, so day-to-day situation now.
He's not close.
Last topic, Mike. So Utah, it's been fun to see, like, just watching their games throughout the season, the fan reaction to that team landing there, you know, the upcoming nickname announcement. I'm not sure if that's happening at the draft or what their rollout plan is. Everybody's talking about the mammoth up there. But what have your impressions been being up there? And I know you haven't been to the game yet, but you covered practice. You were at the morning skate. You've seen that arena, which isn't outfitted for hockey quite yet because of the obstructed views. It's just been a great story to see how it's all planned out after all the distractions around the Arizona Coyotes the last few years.
The Utah Jazz have been here a long time. They were in the NBA Finals twice in the 90s. They're in last place now. You see more Utah Hockey Club stuff around than Utah Jazz stuff. The fan base is really energized. The arena is very nice. It was renovated a few years ago. There's going to be a huge renovation each of the next two summers to make it suitable for hockey. It's not really suitable for hockey yet. You'll see the tarps on the end zones. There's about 5,000 obstructed view seats. They sell them as single goal views. It's a very nice euphemism there. You can only see one net. They sell them for $10 to college kids, and you get a hot dog and a water with your $10 ticket. But you only can see one net out of two because of the pitch of the seating. So that's what they're going to do. They're going to literally take out one end of the arena next year and replace it, do the other end the next year, so that the pitch of basketball, you know, is really heavy vertical. They're going to go more, you know, hockey-centric to allow the views of the entire rink. But it's an enthusiastic market. It's a beautiful city. I've just never been here. You never come for baseball. I never made it here for an NCAA tournament game. So there's a lot to offer here, and the fan base is certainly rewarded, and the players are energized. I was in that locker room this morning, and being home is great for them. They're 5-1-1 in their previous seven. The Arizona distraction is gone. The daily questions are gone. This is their home. New practice facility opens next year in the suburbs. A lot of the players are moving out in that direction. The Olympic Oval, people saw the videos of the Sabres on the speed skating track. That's just a one-year temporary practice facility, which has been a great boon for the Utah Hockey Club. They've enjoyed it. The visiting teams have enjoyed it. But a spanking new practice facility open. The enthusiasm is really high. And for all the trouble the NHL had with the Arizona thing, getting a team into Utah with stable ownership, with deep pockets, with a city that's enthusiastic. This has been a great move.
Yeah. The Arizona State setup was cool. I enjoyed watching a game there. It was unlike anything else like I've ever experienced, but they have to feel like NHL players now because right. The facilities there were not up to standards. We've read all about it. We heard all about it. It was long overdue. We know Gary Bettman wants to go back to Arizona. It's inevitable at some point. They just have to figure out the arena situation and get the right owner in place. But just to cap off, you know, our episode this week, Mike, if you could pick two cities, realistic options for expansion, where would you want to put two teams?
Well, I would want to put a team in Quebec City, guaranteed. It's never happening. It's never happening with the Canadian dollar situation. It's not happening with Gary Bettman as the commissioner of the league. That's where I would go. They have a beautiful arena. They're not getting a team. So sorry, Quebec City. I'd love to see the Nordiques back. Great rivalry with Montreal. Great rivalry with the Sabres in the 80s playoff series. They're not coming back. I think there's no question they want Arizona, but like you said, too many question marks right now. They're going to go to Atlanta again, I'm convinced of it, and people may poo-poo it. They're going to go out into the suburbs where most of the people live, near the area where the Atlanta Braves are playing, and they built the Battery. They're incredible development out there. They're not going to be in downtown like the Thrashers were, and the Thrashers had ownership issues. And after that, You know, Bettman likes big American markets. That's why he wants to go back to Phoenix, and that's why he really needs to get into Houston. You could get another incredible rival for the Dallas Stars, but it's a massive market. It's a top 10 market. It has an arena ready to go. They can share the arena with the Rockets. Now, again, the ownership question has been an issue in Houston. Who wants to own a hockey team? But I'm convinced that if you're going to pick two markets, and I think this is what Bettman's going to pick, he's going to want Atlanta and Houston as the next two teams in this league.
It's inevitable. Those are the two obvious choices. You mentioned it, and it's all about the television contracts because you get those two massive markets. You know, they're obviously TNT is a big deal, TNT, Atlanta, you know, and it's a tough sell. I understand that because of the other failures in Atlanta over the years, but like you said, that setup with the Braves now, where that ballpark is, it's awesome. And there's a great complex there that makes it much easier than have everybody having to go into downtown. You'd get, and there's interest, right? I think that they've had a history of hockey fans down there in Houston. That would be one of those places, a sleeping giant, because right. No state income taxes. They could get good, right? That's a place guys would want to play in. You know, it wouldn't be very tough to build a winner down there, in my opinion. Plus natural rivalries. You could put them back in the Central. They got to realign the divisions. Utah shouldn't still be in the Central. It's just, do you think that expansion should happen? Because there are people who are saying that, yeah, I mean, like financially it makes sense, but it would, you know, deplete the talent. And
well, I think we're looking at a situation where international talent is growing. There are more hockey players now in places like Germany than we've ever seen.
Yeah.
They're going to end up with more Europeans in the league, more Germans, more Swiss. You know, we've seen some of these countries in Europe develop players. It doesn't all have to be from Canada and the USA. And I do think expansion's inevitable because of the money. And the NHL has learned their lessons. They learned the lessons from the Thrashers and from the Columbus Blue Jackets. Expansion teams can no longer at this price be bad for 10 years. They need to have a setup where they can get good quickly. And then maybe not Vegas good, but you look at Seattle already was in – they're struggling now. They were in game 7 of the second round in their second year. So the expansion draft setup has been made to help these teams get good faster because you no longer want the Thrashers or the Columbus Blue Jackets languishing for years if you've paid – $800, $900 million, $1 billion for an expansion team. So they will make sure that these teams are at least mildly competitive.
Yeah. And I think the people who cite concerns about talent don't pay attention to how good the American Hockey League is now. Like the quality of play in the American Hockey League is much higher than it used to be. It's not just a bunch of grinders. It's not a bunch of overage vets. Like it is a very high skilled game and very entertaining more often than not. So,
and where are we producing players from? We're producing hockey players in places like Florida and Texas and yep. California and Arizona. That's all within the last 10 years that's really developed in the wake of some of these Stanley Cup teams like the Kings and the Ducks and the Panthers and the Lightning. And, you know, we're producing hockey players in areas we were not producing hockey players 20 or 30 years ago. So there's going to be enough talent to fill these teams.
It's funny because we see at the combine every year how many kids are from those areas. And a lot of times their fathers or they have people in their family who work for ECHL teams down south. Like Jake Richard, the Sabres prospect, his dad worked for the Florida Everblades, right? So it's to see the evolution of hockey and to where that it's finally at the point where you can have that many teams. It just speaks to the growth of the game. And, you know, the business is going to be booming with Four Nations, all the international play coming up and expansion. It's going to be pretty interesting. So that wraps a bow on it, Mike. Let's move on. And it's going to be a very busy week. You move on, obviously, Utah tonight, but the Sabres are in Minnesota and Winnipeg this weekend. Two big home games next week, Ottawa on Tuesday. So Dylan Cousins and Dennis Gilbert will be back in Buffalo for the first time since the trade. The Penguins are in town on Thursday. Then the Sabres are back on the road, Philly, Washington, and Ottawa. So a little bit of Ovechkin watch on next weekend, that's for sure.
He won't get there against the Sabres. He's kind of slowing down a little bit here as it gets to the end. But, you know, reminder that when it gets to five, that's when Bettman and Gretzky are going to be traveling, and it's really going to become a traveling circus following Ovechkin around.
See how many empty net goals he gets between now and then, though. You just never know. All right, he's Mike Harrington. I'm Lance Lysowski. Thanks for listening. And as always, we're always on the road, so please follow along. If you don't have a digital subscription, please do so. Well worth the buck, and thank you, and we will talk to you next week.
Express Windows is a best of 716 favorite for window and door installation. They also offer discounts for military personnel and seniors. Learn more at expresswindowsinc.com. Express Windows, fast, easy, affordable.